ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक्प्राणश्चक्षुः श्रोत्रमथो बलमिन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वं ब्रह्मोपनिषदं माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्त्वनिराकरणं मे अस्तु तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्माः ते मयि सन्तु ॐ शान्ति 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 हरिः। ॐ ॐ मे मै लिम्स् स्पीच् वैटल् फोर्स् ऐस् इयर्स् एज़ आल्सो स्ट्रेंथ एंड ऑल दि ऑर्गन्स बिकम वेल डेवलप्ड एवरीथिंग इज दि ब्रह्मन रिवील्ड इन दि उपनिषद्स मे आई नॉट डिनाई ब्रह्मन मे नॉट ब्रह्मन डिनाई मी लेट देयर बी नो स्पर्निंग ऑफ मी बाय ब्रह्मन लेट देयर बी नो रिजेक्शन ऑफ ब्रह्मन बाय मी मे ऑल दि वर्च्यूज दैट आर स्पोकन ऑफ इन दि उपनिषद्स रिपोज इन मी who am engaged in the pursuit of the self. May they repose in me. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have been studying the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Now we are going to enter into the first and second mantras. So as we discussed earlier, this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad has six chapters. And again, every two chapters are combined into one. So the very first one is called Madhukandam or Upadesha Kandam. Kandam means section dealing with real teaching. Aham Brahmasmi. And the second part is supported the same teaching with reasoning, rationality. That is the subject matter. It is also called Yajnavalka Kanda, Muni Kanda, Upadesha Kanda with Tarka, Shruti Sammata Tarka. Then the third two chapters, third part are called Khila Kandam, miscellaneous items, and some of the items are most marvelous. And as I mentioned earlier at the very beginning, we are not going to go by mantra, but we will take the very essence of it. That way, we will not be really confused. Otherwise, this is one of the biggest of the Upanishads, containing, I think, more than 640 mantras. I do not know exactly. I did not count the mantras. So, to go through every one of them is neither necessary nor it we need to waste essential points in the light of the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda will be very useful. Now this first chapter, it is according to the interpretation of Shankaracharya, it is follows the Advaita Vedantic methodology called Adhyaropa and Apavada. What is Adhyaropa? Accept our experience, our present experience. Yes, you are right. What you are experiencing is real. But there are certain points you have to note down. Then only you will understand what is the nature of this world you are experiencing. What is the point? First of all, it depends upon you. If you, the subject, are sleeping in coma, unconscious, the whole universe disappears, so far as you are concerned. So the world depends upon you. Even though in our ordinary experience, we say we depend upon the world. But actually, we can see, we can shape the whole world. What does an artist do? He shapes whatever object, be it wood, be it stone, according to his own concept. He can bring out Rama or he can bring out Ravanasura depending upon his samskaras. He can bring out Krishna, he can bring out Kamsa, doesn't matter. A writer can express his own beautiful imaginations and manifest them in the form of beautiful language, literature. And earlier days, we used to study the literature of both the East and the West. Nowadays, I don't know whether they are doing it. And then a poet or a musician. The limit is the sky, one's own imagination. Our dreams, we can dream whatever we like. We think most of the time by mistake that a dream overwhelms us. We are forced to experience the dream, but no, depending upon if a child is reading gods and goddesses, spiritual books, endowed with spiritual samskaras, he will be dreaming of gods and goddesses like Nagamahashaya. But if somebody is interested in Superman or evil characters, and so many people are addicted to these evil characters because they want to be like that, but they don't have the capacity to be like that. So they watch these films. So how they can rule over the world? So in imagination, and whenever a cricket fan goes on imagining, his biggest heroes will be those who fetch the greatest number of runs. So everything depends upon our mind. And the mind is endowed with borrowed consciousness. And then when the mind pays attention, only that thing is experienceable by us. So the world depends upon us. Second, it is continuously changing. And third, it consists of three parts: form, name, and utility. Rupa, nama, karma. So, what does the scripture tell us? To fortunate souls who want to progress in spiritual life, who believe in the teachings of the scriptures, and who want to realize God. So, first of all, if the scripture starts saying this world is unreal, then we are likely to give up the world, the scriptures, rather than give up the world. But if the scriptures accept it is true, but do not think it is not real, it is mithya. Mithya means dependent, ever-changing, unreliable, etc. So this is called adhyarupa, accepting temporarily. And then the scripture doesn't stop there. It goes on telling, what do you want in this world? I want money. All right, do this, you will get money. Chant the name of Mahalakshmi mantra, or recite Sri Suktam, or Kanakadhara Stavam. And definitely Sri Ramakrishna said, he proved to the hilt that every mantra in the scriptures, meaning Vedas, Puranas, Tantras, Gurus, they're all absolutely true. He proved it. When he used to do puja, when he used to chant a particular mantra, for example, Agni mantra, Ram, immediately used to see a wall of fire springing up, protecting him. Ramakrishna, when he was young, he used to visit a crematorium there, Bhuter Khali, and he used to carry a pot of rice, cooked rice. And then he said later on, the pot disappears in the midair from our eyes. That means there are spirits which accept them. And now, what little original brain we have, we are fast losing it to the new AI, and that becomes our reality. But I can assure you, it is not going to be so for long, because human being, every human being is potentially divine, and there would be a lot of knocks, sticks, not always carrots. God will give those sticks to awaken us. Uttishtata, jagrata, prapyavaran, nibodata. So slowly, the teacher tells him, you fulfill your desires through the scriptural means. And the person maybe starts skeptically, but then in course of time, he gets what he was promised. He develops faith slowly, and when he opens his eyes and further looks into the scripture, he says, these are all. Why do you want? Why are you content, satisfied with temporary results and limited happiness, limited existence? You can have eternal existence, infinite knowledge, unbroken bliss, sat, chit, ananda, satyam, jnanam, anantam, brahma. By now, the student's mind has developed tremendous shraddha. Then starts the second part of the scripture, which is called apavada. So what I told you, that is true only for that level of students, or when you are at that level. But now you have crossed over. Now you yourself are longing for something higher. Now I will teach you. That is called apavada. What is apavada? In a way of speaking, the world is unreal. To prove that the world is insubstantial, unreliable, ever-changing, undangerous, causing repeated births, repeated sufferings. But that is the common view. But the scripture, through the Guru, teaches, no, that is only the middle way. When you reach the middle state of your development, that would be your understanding. But later on you understand, everything is Brahman. But this world is, it is a Leela. It is a divine play. Everybody, everything in this universe is only the infinite imagination of the infinite Brahman. So, what is suffering? That is also part of the Leela. What is happiness, bliss? That is also part of Leela. But that is the apavada. Apavada means negation. Negation means your understanding of the world. First of all, it is the only reality has been transformed into, it is a changing, unreliable, insubstantial reality that is changed into that everything is Brahman. And the final step is everything is the Leela of Brahman. For a Jivan Mukta, this applies especially. So, what a beautiful way. First, like a child giving a real apple, saying this is called apple, and the spelling starts with A. This is beetroot, it starts with the B, and this is a carrot, and it starts with C, like that. Slowly, person is helped to evolve, both physically and also spiritually, intellectually, spiritually. Does the body evolve? I mean, the understanding, the body also evolves. There is a vast difference, which Sri Ramakrishna illustrates it so beautifully. Say there is a kind of sweet in Bengal, and the outside looks absolutely same, but the inside can be filled with hard lentils, kalaidal, or it can be filled with coconut plus jaggery, or it can be filled up with what we call chana, or the broken milk, which is called cheese actually in English language, but that's not a correct word. There is a vast difference between cheese and then this paneer. What a delicious curry it makes if it is done properly. So this is what slowly the teacher takes him. And then in the very first chapter, as we just now mentioned, it is called Upadesha Kanda, Madhu Kanda. Upadesha means teaching. Usually, the word Upadesha means when a guru initiates a disciple, that is called Upadesha. But the same thing, instead of a mantra, he also gives the explanation, teaching. You should look upon your body as Brahmapuri. You should look upon your mind also as Brahmapuri, Dharakasha. And it is an abode of the purest of the pure. Brahman, Jyotira Jyoti, resides within it. So this is how you will have to slowly orient your thought. This body is a sacred temple. Then once, when one succeeds in thinking of oneself as a sacred temple and Brahman is within and I am not different from that Brahman, slowly his understanding is also applied first to mother, then the father, then the teacher, then everybody else, slow expansion. As an example, you must recollect, first Gopalasma had darshan of child Gopala. And then next morning, like a mad woman, she ran to Dakshineswar. And there he saw this Krishna, God, ye yatha mam prapadyante tan tatha eva bhajamyaham. Whatever pathway a person chooses to approach and come to me, I will run towards him and take him into my bosom, teach him. So Gopala's mother, that is Gopala, Krishna, Balakrishna, he started entering into Sri Ramakrishna's body, coming out. Several times he did this until Gopala's mother understood, my Gopala and Sri Ramakrishna are not different. They are one and the same. In fact, Gopala's mother had first the vision of Sri Ramakrishna, then only Sri Ramakrishna transformed himself into the child Gopala. So, that was the first teacher, Acharya, had become Gopala. Then, after a few days, when this idea, after a few days means, when this idea, Sri Ramakrishna and Krishna, there is absolutely no difference. When this idea became firm and unshakable, then now Gopala started and doing exactly the same thing, but with other direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. Now she started understanding, because the first understanding made her understand the other facts very quickly. My Gopala wants to teach me that I am Rakhal, I am Narendra, I am Tarak, and I am the other disciples. Like that, we don't know into how many disciples, devotees, Gopala entered into and came out until she realized. But that is also a partial view. It is not complete realization. And then after some weeks or months, there was a chariot festival. And then this lady had gone to attend that one and she described graphically. Those who wish, they can refer to the Sri Ramakrishna, the great master by Swami Sharadananda. She said, that day I have universal vision of my Gopala. Everything, living, non-living, moving, non-moving, the priest, the audience, the chariot, the people who are pulling the chariot, the music makers, without exception, everybody was nothing but her Gopala. With that, her realization, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, was over. So that is the purpose of Adhyaropa and Apavada. So, as I mentioned, chapter 1, this two chapters combined is called Madhukanda, or it is also called Upadeshakanda. So this first chapter contains the analysis of Adhyaropa. How do we know? Because in the following, in the first chapter, following certain types of contemplations. Contemplation, about that I will speak. Even though I have spoken many times, every time we have to remember it until it sinks into the very bottom of our unconscious. So, there is what is called very first beginning. An upasana is mentioned. First, it is the contemplation on a horse. Second, it is a contemplation on agni or fire. Third, it is a contemplation on prana. So, Ashva, Agni and Prana. In this Upanishad, the chapters are known as Adhyayas. Very interesting word, this word Adhyaya. Adhyaya means, Adhyapakaha means teacher. Adhyayana is studying. So, it is Adhyaya means that which teaches what a person wants to learn. And there are each chapter has several sections. Each section is called a Brahmana. So, in the first three Brahmanas of the first chapter, we see three meditations. Ashva Upasana. Upasana means contemplation. Agni Upasana, Prana Upasana. And then, it is not an ordinary Upasana. Let us see, what does it mean? Upasana means contemplations. So, the first Brahmana of the first chapter consists of two verses and the second consists of seven. And both these, first Brahmana, second Brahmana, are devoted to the meditation on a horse. And the fire used in that particular ritual called Ashva Medha Yajna. This is the highest of all Vedic rites. And it confers, what does the person who successfully completes this Ashva Medha Yajna, what does he get? He will go to Prajapati Loka, Virat Loka, Brahma Loka. But this sacrifice involves tremendous amount of money, time, power, intelligence, everything. Why? Because briefly, the best horse that is available in the kingdom is chosen and it is left free. Now you go and roam all over the world. And of course people drive it and they worship it because that is the most sacred animal when it returns. The purpose is twofold. The first purpose is whichever kingdom the horse enters, the king who is performing the sacrifice has to subdue them. If he cannot subdue, he cannot perform that Ashwamedha Yajna. That's why only a powerful Kshatriya king can really do it. And then if somebody raises and decides to fight, then the soldiers are the best soldiers with the best commander-in-chief are asked to go there and that person will go on defending it. Even Rama had done that. And then Ashva came to a forest where this Muni Valmiki was residing. Rama had asked Sita, what is called outcast her. She had to leave the kingdom. And she took shelter. She was pregnant. And Lakshmana, who was devoted to Mother Sita, was asked to take her far away from Ayodhya. So, he was shedding tears, but he had to obey Rama. Then he brought her to Valmiki Rishi. There she gave birth. Valmiki Rishi, who wrote this Valmiki Ramayana, he became like a grandfather. He adopted Sita as his own daughter. And with the utmost tenderness, he looked after her and she gave birth to twins, Lava and Kusha. The story is marvelous, very purifying. So, Valmiki not only was a poet, he was also an expert archer. He taught the best. And then these two children grew very proud. And then one day they saw this horse sent by, they did not know, his own father Rama. And then Hanuman was supposed to be the commander-in-chief. And nobody can defeat Hanuman because he is called Mukhya Prana. Nobody can defeat Prana because if you fight with Prana, Prana will leave you. Then you will be a dead person. But here, Mukhya Prana means the chief, best teacher of Brahma Vidya. How do we know? Because I have narrated that the symbolism of South Indian version, Sita was the individual soul. She fell into the net of Mahamaya called Ravanasura and Rama sent Hanuman to rescue her. He crosses the ocean. Ocean of what? Samsara, Maya. And then he gives Upadesha. Rama He is concerned about you. He will soon come and rescue you. God will bless you very soon and you will be free from samsara bandhana. That was the message. That's why Hanuman was called Mukhya Prana. Mukhya Prana means one of the greatest Brahma, Jnana, Jnani, Guru. So she liberated Sita, who in this version is compared to a bound soul. We have to understand the symbolism. And Yoga Vasishtha Ramayana, Adhyatma Ramayana are variations of the same meaning. So, Hanuman was the commander-in-chief. But Hanuman knew everything where Sita was living and Lavanda Kusha and then this Lava Kusha. They caught hold of the horse, bound it. And Hanuman was bound to fight with Lava Kusha. And Lava Kusha, they already were experts, as good as Rama. So, they were taking mother Sita's name because they had the greatest faith in their mother. If my mother's grace falls upon me, she is the divine mother, we can conquer, we can kill, we can bind, we can overcome anybody. And Hanuman had to give in. Then Hanuman was bound, the horse was brought to the, then Sita saw Hanuman, laughed out, and then released him, introduced him to Lava Kusha. There is a funny version of it also, I want to share with it. In Bengali, there is a song also there. So Hanuman is unconquerable. Nobody can conquer him because he is Brahmagnani. Who can conquer a guru? Impossible. But then he allowed himself, indulgingly like a grandfather, being defeated by his grandchildren in chess or some play. Oh, and since I have been defeated, I have to carry you around. That is the bet. And the children, not knowing, they climb onto the grandfather's shoulders and use him like a horse. Anyway, the funny story goes here. So Hanuman, it seems, perceived the pride and he composed, there is a poet composed a song, Ure Kushi Lau. If I had not voluntarily allowed myself to be conquered by you, could anyone have conquered me? It is impossible. That means nobody can go beyond Guru. Guru is Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru is Maheshwara. Who can cross God himself? But every devotee should be happy to fight with God. And then Ramprasad also composes a song. So I will take you to court, O mother. You are not giving me my inheritance. And I will call my father as a witness that this property belongs to me. I have come of age and you will have to yield. And if you don't yield, I will catch hold of your lotus feet and I will go on crying ma, ma, until you have no option but to give me what I want. Beautiful bhajans in this meaning have been composed by quite a number of bhajan makers like that. Anyway, what is our point here? That a kshatriya, a powerful, he must be intelligent, he must be very strong, and it involves a lot of money and time, maybe several years until the horse returns. So that is called Ashva Medha Yajna. When finally the horse returns, then it is sacrificed and its medha, brain, which is prasada, has to be partaken by those who conduct that, including the king, etc. Then what does it give? Such a person, if he can successfully accomplish this Ashwamedha Yajna, the scripture promises that he will go to Brahmaloka. Now, we have to understand something very important. So first I will tell you, many people want to go to Brahmaloka, but very few people, including Brahmanas, they cannot afford to perform this sacrifice. What should they do? Now what they should do is they should mentally do exactly the same thing that the Kshatriya king does, not conquering other kingdoms, but just contemplate on the horse. I am going to come to that point, most uplifting portion. This is called contemplation. And whoever is not a powerful, intelligent, rich Kshatriya, anybody who has that capacity of the mind, whether he is a Brahmana, other Kshatriyas, or other caste people, they can do it. This is called Dhyana Mantra. But the horse should be contemplated as Virat. Virat means Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha means Brahma. So every part of the horse is described here. And every part is compared to one part of this universe. So that is the most marvelous thing. We get such things also when the time comes. I will quote from that also. So, not only powerful kings, others, however, can also obtain its result through a symbolic meditation in which the different parts of the sacrificial horse are to be regarded as the different parts of the creator, Prajapati's body. Now, what do they get? Whether it is the Kshatriya who actually performs it or others who do is this Ashwamedha Upasana as Virat Upasana, as Hiranyagarbha Upasana, as Brahma Upasana. The result is all of them, without exception, go to Brahmaloka. Now, Brahmaloka is the most exalted plane in this entire creation. Brahma is the presiding deity and this world is the manifestation of that Brahma only. So, an what is the speciality of this Brahmaloka? Any inhabitant of Brahmaloka is conscious of his individuality. I'll tell you why. And at the same time, knows his identity with all created beings. Who is Brahma? He who identifies himself with all the creation is called Brahma. But at the same time, he doesn't say, I am Parabrahma, Supreme Brahman. I am an individual. But the whole universe is my individuality. Can we understand it? Yes, every day we go to our Swapna Loka. What are we doing? The waker I, because after waking state comes the dream state. The waker I, one waker I becomes the entire universe created by him in imagination in the state of his dream. But at the same time, even in the dream, we are highly conscious of our individuality, but in the dream world, we are not conscious of the fact that we are every object that is there in the dream world. For that, we have to wake up, come to this waking world and recollect the dream. Oh, I became the tree, I became the tiger, I became my neighbors, I became my friend, I became my enemy, and somebody, I gave myself a great present in the form of the somebody else. And somebody else also, I robbed myself. Whatever happens in the dream state, that upon waking up, I, the one waker, alone has created. And I am an individual. Because in the waking state also, we are conscious, I am different from everything else in this universe. That is the condition of the Brahmaloka. He knows much better than the waker that the entire created world is me, but because loka means limitation. Therefore, he knows I am an individual, and only when he attains to Brahman, then that individuality will be totally destroyed. Until that time, he knows this entire creation is me and nothing else. And even that gives such happiness, the more expansive, the more the identification, the more will be our happiness. Just imagine, for that we have to have a good imagination. What is it? Imagine that you are a householder and then you have, this is at least 100 years back, and you have several fields. You are a very good person, very intelligent person, and you are also an expert cultivator, and you got married to a very devout wife, and you started having children. Maybe you had 5-6 children, and they are all married, and they should be male. And all the children, after marriage, are staying in the same house as joint family. And everybody in this joint family is very, very, very good person. Husbands, wives, and their children also very good, loving, helping each other. They consider the entire joint family as me. Just imagine. And then you can understand what this person in Brahmaloka feels. How happy from one point of view, there can be what is called too many rains, too less rains. That is a different issue. I am only giving a positive picture. This person, he knows I am an individual. I have got this great family, but they're all my children, my grandchildren, and they are all extremely good, and they are leading the footsteps of me, and everywhere people praise. If at all there should be any joint family, it should be like that. So a denizen, a citizen of Brahmaloka, he identifies himself with this entire universe. What happens? He doesn't see the defects. He doesn't see the wickedness. He doesn't see the suffering. That is something we have to keep in mind. Because what does he see? Just as a person, if a dream is very good, he would like to recollect that dream as many times as possible and re-enjoy. Like that, this person, for him, there is no birth, there is no death. It is a beautiful, marvelous drama that is taking place. This is how we have a glimpse, a little bit understanding of what is a Brahmaloka. And once a person attains to this state, what happens? He experiences the highest happiness possible in this dualistic world. Then what happens? One who knows that I am in Brahmaloka, in fact, I have become one with Brahma by contemplating on him. I identified myself with Brahma, and that is called Brahmaloka experience. Whatever Brahma experiences is my experience, and Brahma is the creator. Therefore, a creator like clay, it identifies itself with all the products, any number of pots, small, big, holy, unholy, etc. This person, he doesn't say, I am in Brahmaloka, like I am in Bangalore. And that person is my neighbor. This person is a friend. No, in Brahmaloka, I am Brahma. That is called Brahmaloka. A person who reaches Indra Loka, I am Indra, I am Prajapati, I am Brihaspati. We have to understand that particular fact. So one who knows this, then his eyes open further and say, even this Brahmaloka is perishable. Maybe for a long time, and extraordinarily great quantum of happiness is experienced here, but as soon as the result of the karma comes to an end, he has to again come back. He has to again earn that punyam, like a person who stays in a first-class hotel, enjoys everything, and then comes back, and then he has to earn once more. If he wants to stay in that hotel, like that, he understands. These are all the rites, all these upasanas, where the distinction between the worshipper and the deity is admitted. Such a person becomes eager for the knowledge of Brahman, which alone enables one to attain freedom and immortality. So, before we go into the text, we have to understand, or rather, remind ourselves, what results do we get if we can hone, if we can perfect the art of contemplation? Of course, like first class students, first thing is concentration on deviating concentration. Second, unmitigated, extraordinarily positive, great spiritual imagination. What do you think Sri Ramakrishna was doing when he was meditating upon the Divine Mother? He was exercising his imagination. He was not meditating upon a stone-like figure made out of basalt that he used to worship. No, a living imagination. Third, he is replacing in contemplation upasana a lower object with a higher object. Example, what is called Shivalinga with Shiva, a Saligrama with Vishnu, and a symbol called cross with Jesus Christ, etc. Four, what happens in this upasana? Separation of everything from I, the pure consciousness. So, we come in this upasana, pure consciousness alone is everything. And everything derives this consciousness. First the mind borrows it, then it lends to the sense organs. This happens to all living creatures in this world. And according to Advaita Vedanta, even the non-living creatures, they are also manifestations of Sat, Chit and Ananda. Only they are not even aware. They exist, but they are not aware that we exist. They are not aware that we are Ananda Swarupas. Only living beings experience it. And when that experience is very short, that is, when it comes to an end, it is called unhappiness. Again attempt to become one with happiness. That is how it goes on. So, separation of everything from I with pure consciousness. And then that I, which is now pure consciousness, should be united. This individual consciousness should be united with the universal consciousness. That is, instead of saying, I am so and so, I am Brahman. That is how it, or if we start with the slow things, I am Kali, I am Shiva, I am Vishnu, slowly, slowly. Or if we cannot even understand that, I am the Anabrahma, I am the Prana Brahma, I am the Mano Brahma, I am the Vijnanamaya Brahma, I am the Anandamaya Brahma. Slowly, slowly ascending but identifying with the larger whole. That is the purpose of upasana. And lastly, this is called expansiveness of mind, chitta vaishalyata, to say gradually on one side I give up my limitedness and I start identifying with the universal. And that is these are the six benefits of upasana. So this first brahmana is called Ashwamedha Brahmana. In fact, the first three brahmanas, first, second and third, talk about these upasanas. And we have to remember this is called Adhyarupa Prakarna because Srishti, that is creation, is vividly described here. As I mentioned, this description is meant for the purpose of what? Because the Guru doesn't want to deny our experience that, you know, this universe is real, but it is an effect. An effect is always limited from the cause. Cause is unlimited, effect is limited. So you will be more happy if you expand yourself into the cause. Find out the cause of this universe. Who is that Brahma? Find out the cause of Brahma. Then it becomes Brahman. That is the purpose. So, there are three upasanas in these three first brahmanas. What is a brahmana? Every section is called a brahmana. We see three upasanas, Ashva, Agni and Prana. We will talk about this in our tomorrow's class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayosritva Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.